Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Coach Chat Radio. I'm Laurie Lawson, and my co-host, is the always amazing and fantastic.
Thanks, Laurie. It's Bernie Siegel here, calling from a frigid Catskill Mountains in upstate New York.
That'll teach you to go upstate, but it's not much warmer in New York City, so don't worry about it. Let me tell you a little bit about Coach Chat. We believe at Coach Chat, if you change your perspective, you can change your entire life. We developed this show for coaches and for those interested in one of the fastest growing professions in the world today. We hook you up with some of the world's leading coaches who share their expertise and give you tips and takeaways for expanding and improving your life and your business. And boy, do we have a winner today. Adam Mirabella. Hey, Adam, how you doing?
Good, good. Thank you for having me.
You made me nervous. I said, I thought we had him. Let me tell you a little bit about Adam. He is the CEO of Mirabella Leadership Advisors, which provides exceptional leadership and executive coaching for top companies around the world. Some of those companies include Coca-Cola, Time Warner, Sony, Nokia, Omnicom, Vitec Group, and Universal Music Group, just to mention a few. He helps companies willing to invest in their people, which in turn leads to a coaching culture that engages employees at all levels. And we are seeing this come on as such a trend. Finally, it's not all trickle down and trickle up. So I'm looking forward to talking to him. So I'm going to welcome you, Adam, and tell you that we're just getting ready to pound you with some questions. Go, Bernie. I'll let you go first.
All right. And if I have a little technical glitch with my phone, please have me repeat myself, because I've been told that there could be a little much of a problem, maybe being in the mountains. Adam, a lot of our listeners love to hear a little bit about the journey that our guests took to where they became a coach. And so it would be great if you just spend a couple of minutes on, now, how did you get to become a coach?
Yeah, that's great. And just to clarify, the companies that were outlined at the beginning are the companies that I worked for as an executive, and I did have what I would call a coaching style as a manager, and a lot of the team members that worked for me would say that. But, you know, it's a great segue to talk about, you know, how I moved into coaching and also some of the clients I have today. So those companies really informed my management and leadership style, which was great. They all had resources to help develop me. And as I was deciding, you know, to end my corporate career, I had been in corporate for quite a long time, and I thought, you know, I think it's time to end my corporate career. Just as that was happening, a friend of mine asked me if I would coach her. And I pointed out to her, well, I'm happy to do that, but I'm not really a coach. Like, you know, I've been a manager and a leader, but I'm not really a coach. But she was persistent. She said, you know, I know from working with a lot of your team, I think you would be really great. Would you mind doing that? So I did that for her as a favor. And we were about two-thirds of the way through the time that we were going to work together. And she said, you know, I just want to tell you, my company has paid for me to have an executive coach. And I asked you to do this for me as a favor because I thought you would really be great in this particular instance. And she said, you know, I think you're just as effective and in some ways maybe more effective than the coach that the company is paying for. You know, this is something you might want to consider. And so she really put that idea in my mind. And so that kicked me off on a brand new journey. I really took that to heart. I was really appreciative that she shared that with me. And then I decided to really investigate what is executive coaching all about, and how do you really wrap your arms around the art and the science of coaching? And that led me to the International Coaching Federation, which obviously is is the gold standard when you're certified by the ICF. And I found a program that was accredited by the ICF. I put myself through that program. And then, of course, that also includes, you know, many, many hours of paid coaching in order to get your certification. Once I got my certification, I then started to look around at places where I thought I could make a difference. And some of my clients today are, you know, just fantastic forward-leaning companies like Peloton, Dell, Amazon. I'm also working with the Canadian government. So these are organizations that really appreciate lifting up the coaching abilities of the management and the leadership in the organization. And then that leads to this coaching culture, which is sort of this effect. If you have strong management and leaders that really understand how to lead through coaching, then their people naturally learn those skills, and it kind of cascades from there.
Wow, that's a pretty good sign. I'm a firm believer that coaching calls who it wants, and in this case, it clearly called you through the person you were coaching and the company. So good for you. I'm interested. When did you see the trend change? And when did you see the trend change where suddenly leaders realized that, you know what, leadership's cool, but we need to make it more encompassing. We need to include people. Because you've been at this game for a long time. When did you actually see that start to change?
Well, I think, you know, this idea of coaching being a perk almost, and being a really strong resource for a leader, in my opinion, as someone who has been in corporate America and is now coaching, it really started to come into its own in the last, let's call it, 7 to 10 years. And now, as I mentioned, I mean, there are companies that they're using coaching for incentives and as a benefit to their highest performers. And so I think this is exactly where coaching should be. This is exactly how coaching should be perceived. So I'm very pleased about that shift in perception around coaching.
Adam, I found that, and it's somewhat typical, I want to hear your experience, but most managers get promoted because of their technical skills, not because they have leadership skills. And I do some work for the Ken Blanchard Company, and each year they do a survey, and the results are typically the same. 50 to 70% of new leaders fail or underperform in the first 2 years because they don't have leadership training and or coaching. And so I find a lot of clients really don't know how to lead. They don't know what leadership best practices are. So you as an executive coach, what do you find with many of your clients, and how do you help them when they may be lacking some of those, you know, basic skills?
Well, I think you've hit something right on the head, which is it's a natural inclination for a company to say, well, they're top performer in this area of the business, whether that's sales or finance or HR or whatever, let's promote that person into a leadership role where they're managing and overseeing other people. But I think that this is, sometimes very flawed thinking because, first of all, the person who might be the best at that function may not be interested in getting results through other people. If you're going to lead, your whole mindset has to shift from I'm going to get something done myself, which is an individual contributor, and I'm going to deliver results. And it has to shift to I am going to deliver results through other people by inspiring them and motivating them. And it really doesn't matter what function you come from. Just because you're great at that function, it doesn't mean that you have the skill set to inspire and motivate results through other people. And so what we work on with executive coaching is helping those new leaders, those new managers, to define their own leadership presence and to realize the best ways that they can affect the business through other people. And I know I said new managers because that's a great place for coaching, but quite frankly, there are people that are in their positions for 5 years, 10 years, and they just know they're not engaging their teams, and they're not sure why. That's another great place for somebody who's been, you know, in a management or leadership role for a long time to take stock and say, yeah, it's going well, and I'm still great at this function, and I know how to make everything work within this function. But how do I inspire other people on my team to be as strong at this as I am? That's a whole other place, and I think sometimes there's an awakening for managers who realize that they've been in a role for a long time, but they're not maximizing results because they can't really inspire others.
I did a couple of workshops for NASA, and they've been on top of that for like 30 years. They realize that they've got to promote people who are very technical, but they also realize that they've got to have some kind of leadership skills. What are you finding in 2020? Grantedly, has been totally crazy. What are you finding are some of the biggest challenges out there when it comes to creating leadership and effective teams?
Well, I think there are a couple of pieces there. One is just for the leader to understand how they operate, how they, where their strengths and where their strengths are and where their outliers in their skill set and their approach. So I think that's one really strong way for a leader to understand how they are interacting with other people. The other place, which has been very hot for the last 5 years or so, is in emotional intelligence, and there's a lot going on around that. I am certified on the Genos model of emotional intelligence, which has been the number one tool in globally for many years and used by companies like IBM and others. But in emotional intelligence, right now, there was just a survey and research done by the Capgemini group. And basically, what they found is 74% of executives and 58% of non-supervisory employees believe that EI is going to be the must-have skill for employees over the next 1 to 5 years. So I think people are starting to realize that emotional intelligence has been called a soft skill. I think that term is completely off. I don't think it's a soft skill. I think it's an essential skill. And when you look at metrics like turnover, people, they don't leave companies, they leave managers. And so to really understand about emotional intelligence and how to build up your emotional intelligence, I think is a really important area for leadership.
I'm so glad that we're touching on this topic. I know that you did co-write an article, and emotional intelligence in the post-COVID world and how you can improve it, and which is really great because I also agree with you. It's not a social skill and soft skill. To me, it's a hard skill. You know technically what to do, but you don't know how to get people to do it. And people very often are just not self-aware of how they're affecting other people. So if we can focus on that a little bit, how do you bring up the topic of emotional intelligence with your clients?
Well, I think the main thing there is you kind of hit on it. It's more of a hard skill, or I was saying essential skill. And the truth of the matter is that if you can affect emotional intelligence as a leader and understand the moving parts of emotional intelligence and lean into them, if you can do that, you're going to improve the engagement with your team. And the engagement of your team, if you can improve that, you're going to see things like increased productivity. You're going to see higher sales results. You're going to see, more ideation and creativity. You're going to see new opportunities open up. All of these things happen when engagement improves, and the best way to improve engagement is through emotional intelligence. So I think that's an important point for people to understand.
How are you, just for those of us, we all know the term, how are you defining emotional intelligence?
Well, so emotional intelligence is really, the way that you show up with others, and specifically the core competencies around emotional intelligence. The first two most people have some sense of. Self-awareness and awareness of others are the two foundational pieces of emotional intelligence. But in addition to those, there is authenticity, there's emotional reasoning, which is how you include emotional data into your decision-making. There's self-management, which is now you're not just aware, but you understand how to regulate your emotions in different situations. And then finally, inspiring others. So the six altogether are self-awareness, awareness of others, authenticity, emotional reasoning, self-management, and inspiring performance. And those are the, you know, the, really the core competencies of emotional intelligence. Underneath those are actually observable behaviors. And that's where you can help a leader to understand how they're showing up in each one of these core competencies, because you can ask whether it's their direct reports or their peers, or you could ask external partners or their boss or whoever. You can ask for observable behaviors under these core competencies, and that helps us guide the conversation with the leader about where they can make adjustments and where they should actually shore some things up that they're doing really well.
Thank you. That was a great explanation.
As part of EQ, it's really important to find out what other people think about you and how your behavior. And so I believe it's important for people to be asking for feedback, either asking for feedback or being able to read somebody's body language potentially to find out, well, how are you coming across? That's not something that is really taught in the corporate world, which is the concept of feedback. What are your thoughts about that in terms of people sharing feedback more frequently than, you know, every 6 months or 1 year, where most people dread that, frankly?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of different things in there. I mean, a lot of companies have 360s, and I'm, you know, for that. I think that's very positive. Sometimes in a written way with a 360, the leader who's on the receiving end, they might try to kind of, you know, guess the language, or maybe sometimes it's even, you know, revealed who's given the feedback. And that leads to the leader sometimes wondering, well, what was the motive behind it? Geez, was this, you know, tough situation we had 18 months ago? Are they still bringing that up or whatever? So on a 360, personally, I like what's called the verbal 360, which is where the coach collects all of the information from the colleagues and then synthesizes that into themes and into areas of strength that you want to bolster and you want to see improved, and then areas of opportunity for the leader. So that's one thing around 360s that I thought I would just mention. As it relates to emotional intelligence, you know, that's exactly what we're talking about here, is, you know, going beyond and a little bit deeper than an annual review and giving the people that are interacting with a leader the chance to look at specific behaviors that leader has presented over the course of the last 6 months or a year. And so there's seven different behaviors under each one of these core competencies, and that helps to define very specifically where the leader can look at themselves and see places they want to continue to strengthen and places that they want to improve. So, yeah, I would agree with you that, you know, if you're doing a review once a year, you know, that's – you should have that. I'm not knocking that. That's great. But you should really – if you really want to take your leadership to another level, you need to incorporate and introduce other tools that give people an anonymous way to share feedback with you that you can then act on.
Well, let's go back to your the article that you co-wrote for Forbes, Why a Post-COVID World Demands Greater Emotional Intelligence. In the midst of chaos and survival and all this stuff that we've been going through in 2020, it's kind of easy to see where emotional intelligence will be desired. I think my question to you will be, is it possible? And how do you see it changing, say, in 2021 when we've sort of got this under our belt and at least we know, you know, this is how it's going to be for a while? Is it possible in the midst of chaos? And how do you see it changing as we advance?
Yeah. Well, I think we're at a point now where most leaders at all different levels of organizations, they understand that emotional intelligence is important. They're not exactly sure, you know, how to affect it, but they know it's important. So I think the first step is to really talk openly about that, you know, within the leadership team, and really have, you know, an expectation that the leadership team is going to demonstrate more emotional intelligence. And then the next step is really to figuring out, how can you measure and reward it? You know, it's not just about getting the results. It's about how you get the results. So we want to make sure that we're, as a, you know, as a leadership team looks at their organization, they want to make sure that they're not falling back to that old habit of just rewarding results. When somebody is getting results but they're breaking the relationships in the process, we want to make sure that we're rewarding the people who are getting results and are improving and really connecting the relationships in the process, right? And then I mm-hmm. think there's a way to honor, you know, members of the team, members of the organization that are demonstrating really smart, emotional, intelligent, abilities and skills. And this can be just as simple as, you know, call outs at company events, email recognition, maybe a gift card for somebody who does something really smart and really raises the internal goodwill of an organization. There's a lot of different things, but to look specifically at emotional intelligent behaviors and start to talk about them, start to measure them, start to reveal them, and start to honor where we're seeing great, great progress.
Now, I use a book called Emotional Intelligence 2.0 by Travis Bradbury. Inside it has a free online emotional intelligence assessment. Do you use any assessments with your clients?
I do, yes. The one I use is called Genos, G-E-N-O-S. What I love about Genos is that it is behavioral-based. So when a leader is being rated, we call them raters, whether it's their boss or their peer, when a leader is being rated, we're asking the rater to define the leader on a scale, and it's specifically against observable behaviors. And so that the people who are rating can think about past meetings, can think about past emails or past interactions on the phone, and they can really think about the behavior that that leader had, and they get a chance to rate them. So it's not very ethereal. It's very concrete down to very specific behaviors. But then what's kind of really powerful about that, past that point, is the report is not this, 200-page report for the leader. It's actually they utilize actually almost like a stoplight, green is you're aligned, yellow is you're slightly misaligned, and they don't use red, they use a burnt orange, which is you're fairly misaligned. And what's kind of cool about this report is it does two things. It highlights the level of importance to the person who's rating you, right? How important is this particular behavior? And then the rater gets to say, how well is this person demonstrating it? So it's a level of importance and then a level of demonstration. Well, what this does is it allows the leader to really look at the areas of emotional intelligence that are most important to the people that they're interacting with. So, for instance, I talked about 6 core competencies. We'll make it up. Maybe 4 of those core competencies are more important in that particular organization to the people that that leader's interacting with than the other 2. So the leader can then spend their time in the areas that are most important. And in addition, it tells them how they're doing against, the level of demonstration compared to the level of importance. The last piece is, what's great about this assessment is it actually shows the average level of demonstration for all of the executives that have taken this assessment in North America. So you now have a benchmark where you can see as a leader, am I demonstrating in this particular core competency, am I demonstrating, as much emotional intelligence in this core competency as other leaders? Am I below other leaders, or am I demonstrating more emotional intelligence in this core competency than other leaders in North America? I think that's very, very powerful because it gives you 2 metrics. One is, hey, how important is this to your team? Okay, and how am I doing against that level of importance? And then the other metric is, how am I doing compared to, the majority of, or the population of leaders that have taken this assessment? And am I demonstrating, a level of emotional intelligence that is at least, the norm for leaders that have taken this assessment? So I think both of those pieces of information help to guide a leader on where they want to take their learnings and their development.
Well, great.
I was wondering, Adam, do you have an example? Of course, you don't have to give us names and dates and all that jazz. Do you have an example where that would indicate emotional intelligence at its successful best? I mean, where you actually took a company and it just really thrived under this?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a lot of examples. As I mentioned, Genos is used by a lot of companies. One example in particular was a study that was done with IBM. And in this study, essentially what happened was IBM realized the importance of emotional intelligence, and they wanted to see if they could improve the level of emotional intelligence, what would happen to the team that those leaders were leading. And so what they did is they put a number of their leaders through some emotional intelligence training, specifically the Genos model, where they got to learn where they were strong with some of their core competencies, where they had opportunity areas with the core competencies, what was important to their team, what was not important, et cetera, right, and how they showed up compared to the overall population of leaders. So what they found is that the leaders that had emotional intelligence scores that exceeded 75% of what was expected, the engagement rates were extremely high. So they took leaders from one place, and then they brought them to new understanding of emotional intelligence, and engagement went up. And the leaders that weren't able to kind of grasp the concepts as well and take on the learnings, their teams were either not engaged or actively disengaged, which means that the leaders, because they weren't able to improve their emotional intelligence, they weren't able to get to a level that was really sufficient and important to the teams that they were managing. There were actually some people on those teams that were actively disengaging from the team. And so that's a real example of impacting engagement. And if you can impact engagement in a positive way, that's where you start to see increased revenue. That's where you start to see increased opportunity. That's where you start to see increased collaboration, increased satisfaction of people at the job and for the company, et cetera.
So I'd like to tell clients that increasing your emotional intelligence isn't rocket science. It's not Einsteinian. It's actually so simple and easy. But, of course, people don't know what to do. Do you have one or two tips? I know time is running out, so maybe just a couple of tips on how people can improve some areas of their EQ.
Yeah, I do have a few tips. First of all, the main core two that I talked about earlier, and I when I say they're core, there are six core competencies, but these two people seem to have some understanding of, and that's self-awareness and awareness of others. Well, self-awareness, you really want to key into how are you feeling right now emotionally? Because if you're feeling in a stressed state or a worried state, it impacts your decision-making in a negative way. But just simply tapping into your own emotions and knowing that that's how you're feeling at that moment in time is very powerful, because it will slow you down a little bit, make you consider some things in a different way. So I think that's an important one. The second one is awareness of others and looking at how other people are responding to situations and incorporating that into your thinking. And that leads to the emotional reasoning. So this is a little bit of a heightened state, but if you can read other people and you start to incorporate those emotional data points into your decision-making, for sure you're going to have better decisions that impact the organization in a better way, but it's a real challenge to do that. But those three things, I think, would be really nice first steps.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Well, we are almost out of time, so how can people find you, Adam Mirabella?
Well, of course, I'm on LinkedIn at Adam Mirabella, and then also my company website is MirabellaLeadershipAdvisors.com. And, I'm also available, on Gmail, adam.mirabella@gmail.com.
Okay, you're not hiding. That's good to know. I want to thank you so much for being our guest today. And it was so informative. Bernie, hang in there up in Catskills. Catskills, stay warm.
And to everybody listening, we will see you again in December. Thank you all.
Thank you both.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving. Bye-bye.